This is a Relay Project.
The Discourse starts right now with Cheryl Oates and Erica Baroudes.
Well, welcome back to The Discourse. We were offline last week, so we've got some catching up to do because there's a lot that's been happening in Alberta politics.
Starting with, the province has introduced Bill 18. They're calling it the Provincial Priorities Act. We'll talk about its wide-ranging implications, and we're also going to talk about Recovery Alberta, a new provincial healthcare organization with a very, very specific mandate. And we couldn't have an episode at this point in time without talking about the NDP leadership race. Only a couple of days left to sell memberships.
So as Cheryl mentioned, Bill 18 is called the Provincial Priorities Act. The purpose of the bill is to push back on the federal government overstepping yet again into provincial jurisdiction. Let's see a clip from Premier Danielle Smith's press conference earlier this week.
Today, we are taking back more of our jurisdictional control and telling Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his cabinet that they cannot make deals without our express approval. And this afternoon, I'm pleased to table the Provincial Priorities Act to do just that. Albertans are uninterested in the virtue signaling from Ottawa and the related strings that come with this. We are interested in our fair share of federal funding to move forward with our priorities on roads, on infrastructure, and on housing.
So are you sold, Cheryl? You're like all behind it. You think that's great.
This is just another, when I see an announcement like this, I picture the folks in the premier's office getting together in the morning and being like, what can we do today to fight with Ottawa? What is in the hopper today to fight with Ottawa? And I think when this came up and they're like, did you guys know they're dealing directly with Calgary and Edmonton without talking to us? Let's introduce a bill. I think they probably patted themselves on the back and they were like, this is such a good way for us to grandstand and prove Ottawa's not in charge, Alberta is in charge. And like, I'm not saying it's not working. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous politics.
So this is where I think coming to The Discourse and how it's different than if I was a pundit sitting on a panel talking about this. So I kind of want to split what I think the government's doing into like what they're trying to achieve, which you've kind of talked about is, again, that play on standing up for Alberta, our fair deal in Confederation. To be honest, politically, that is working for Danielle Smith. She's making waves. She's, you know, the most well-known and recognized and deemed like a champion for her province amongst her peers as premier. So from her, like this, and that's why she's leading the announcement and not the Minister of Municipal Affairs, who, you know, later comments on what the bill is actually about. Like, she's introducing it, which again just shows that this is one of her critical pieces and something that she's really owning the audience in. So I think this is, again, speaking to all the Albertans that are frustrated with Ottawa. You know, it does come off of a housing announcement where the federal government in advance of the budget kind of did some leapfrogging across Canada announcing these things, and it was clear, and as mentioned in the press conference, $2 billion to BC, where you get like Calgary and Edmonton getting 175-ish million, very small with comparison population. So I do think that the timing politically made sense. I don't think that they just like curated a bill. As you know, it takes longer than that to come up with.
I think they did.
Yeah. Well, you know, Cheryl, that it takes longer to go through the process than that. But I will say I don't really understand the win. Where I'm looking at this from like everything that's happened. I mean, they still do, in fairness to them, they have the regulatory process where municipalities, all those stakeholders, universities will be able to have those conversations on maybe thresholds or something where the government does step in or doesn't or approves or allows them to get this funding. But I do think there is some kind of like, well, why? Like, again, there's some legislation coming out of this government, but I'm like, why now? And if it's because now's the time you can push some stuff through because we're in the first year of a mandate. But again, like, what does it mean for me is really the missing piece here that I'm kind of critical of why this is brought forward. I will say I'm glad it doesn't say Sovereignty Act anywhere in that damn act title. So
it is like Sovereignty 2.0.
And essentially, like, is that because the Sovereignty Act doesn't really hold merit? So this is executing that.
That was one of my questions. Like, when they brought it in, like, doesn't the Sovereignty Act give you the power to do what you are introducing this act to do? But I think you raise a really important question, because yes, of course, if Danielle Smith feels she's has momentum and she has traction by every day finding a new battle with Ottawa and every day getting to smack down the prime minister, this fits into that calculation. But I think in terms of what it means for voters, it probably means a loss for them. Like, I just can't imagine a world where now that we have this added layer of bureaucracy or this new system that the federal funding has to flow through, that housing happens faster, that mental health and addictions funding flows faster. I know the government has said this is not more red tape, but it's just hard to imagine a situation where it's easier for that funding to flow to cities.
Yeah. And I do want to come back to the conversation of, like, is it red tape or is it, you know, from a government that prides himself on red tape reduction? Mm-hmm. But I do think it's important. One of the things I kind of loved was in that press conference, the premier goes into, and again, winning that narrative of this is us standing up to Ottawa. She goes through a little bit of a list. So I want to throw to that clip right now.
But at the end of the day, I think I know what's happening. Justin Trudeau has said his job is boring. Well, I'll suggest that's because he doesn't actually know what his job is, and therefore he isn't doing it. Because if he were doing his job, he wouldn't have enough time to meddle in my ability to do my job and the ability of other premiers to do their jobs. So here is a partial list of the things he and his government are not doing that they could and should do instead of interfering in provincial matters. He should get rid of the consumer carbon tax. He should fund on-reserve housing and health care. He should close the gap in funding for on-reserve addiction treatment for First Nations. He should provide per capita funding for housing and road infrastructure. He should collaborate to build strong economic corridors. He should develop an aggressive plan on international trade to get our natural resources to market, including a strategy to transport hydrogen and ammonia for export.
It's very much the tone that the federal government and the Alberta government have towards each other. So I'm not surprised, but it is pointing to the fact that Justin Trudeau continues to not really do what he's supposed to be doing and is continuing to meddle. So again, I think that comes back to the point of why the government is introducing this act.
But if anyone had any hesitation about what the point of this legislation and this press conference was, it is all alleviated in this purely political stunt. She's standing up there to basically have a public turf war with Justin Trudeau and once again say, I'm going to defend Alberta's turf, while offering hypocrisy after hypocrisy. Like, to say stay out of the province's business, I'm sure the municipalities are feeling the same way. They just got a ton of funding straight from the government on things that they care about that maybe don't align with what the provincial UCP's ideology is, but they feel that they have a mandate and were elected on it. They have money flowing straight to them. If I was the city, I would say, province, get out of our backyard. Like, we just want these deals to go through so we can move forward with the things that we promised our citizens.
Yeah. And so this is where I'm like, the politics of that, like, I just think that's comical. Like, it's entertainment right there. And it is actually like shitting on the
it's
federal
good for
government.
A radio show. She should have a radio show.
Maybe after her two terms as premier, then she can go. But, you know, I think it's like, again, splitting it into what is this the message of driving that narrative that she does so well and it actually is helping her. She's going to get national news coverage. She's going to highlight some things. And I think it's an opportune time because what I took away from a lot of this announcements that were referenced, the housing announcements where the Prime Minister is kind of like leapfrogged across Canada, is he's in election mode, right? The federal budget's out. It's all of these types of things where it's like he's campaigning. And I think the biggest thing is, and we've talked about this on the show a lot, is like federalism's kind of broken in this province. We don't see the equality of provinces in the federal government. And Justin Trudeau continues to undermine his colleagues or his peers of the provinces and treat them unfairly. So again, I think that there is reason for the government to feel like this. Is the tone, you know, enjoyable? Yes. Is it going to move the needle? But I do know, I mean, the leader of the official opposition, Rachel Notley, had stuff to say about what she thinks Bill 18 is meaning for Albertans.
Our understanding of Bill 18 is that if it goes ahead with what the Premier has been telegraphing, essentially what this government will be doing is wrapping each and every municipality across this province in a spool of red tape as they struggle to make up for the significant funding shortfalls created by this provincial government, this UCP government's cut to so many municipal programs.
See, and that's like that's kind of another hypocrisy here. You cut the programs on a provincial level, but then you want to be part of the deal when they're funded at a federal level because the provincial government hasn't funded them. It just doesn't make sense. And I don't understand how Danielle Smith can continue over the course of 4 years to make fighting the feds without consideration of any of the implications her entire personality.
And so, I mean, I don't disagree. Like, Rachel Notley, take it for the record that I semi-agree with you because I have concerns that this actually does add red tape. It adds bureaucracy. Now, again, as I've said, the regulations haven't been put into place. So for our listeners, you know, that's where they can add thresholds such as like X amount of funds are below the threshold and therefore do not require government approval and things like that. And so I do think that that's probably why the municipalities are relatively quiet on this. They're going to go through that process. But this also includes any Crown Corps, Covenant Health, Alberta Health Services. There is, you know, it goes beyond universities for like
craziest one to me.
How come?
Like funding to universities, like because the province is worried that the universities and the province might move, or sorry, the federal government might move forward with a research program that goes against UCP ideology. Like, come on.
I don't think it's UCP ideology. I do work in post-secondary and I can tell you there's a lot of groupthink and there is a criticism of groupthink where it is like-minded. So I do think that there is a benefit of diversity of thought and hopefully that allows that the federal government isn't intervening politically either. So again, there right now the federal government has shown that they are politically interfering. I hope that these thresholds do create that type of thing. And I mean, I'd love to see diversity in research projects, but I do think that's a fair criticism.
There, though. I don't think
and
this
fair
gets
if it doesn't
there.
Get us there. But I think the thing is that like one, this bill is half through the process, and it hasn't even started the regulatory process. So this bill could. Actually, and again, where I'm concerned, some of that stuff could be addressed. I think the government is, you know, walking a fine line right now, though, and they're going to have to put proof in how they're going to work with those stakeholders to ensure that it doesn't seem political on their end as much as it does. And we're seeing the political from the federal government. And that's, I think, why the government's reacting the way they are. But I do want to come back. So the red tape. I actually don't disagree, but I think Rachel went down kind of like a throwing a lot of shade on, you know, it's limiting, it's not government funding, it's getting in the way. Where does your party sit, or like where are you coming from when you're looking at like this bill's opportunity to stand up for Alberta, right? Like, talk me through, like, Rachel didn't even address that. And it is something that came forward in a Fair Deal panel. It's the UCP ran on it and were elected. So it's just like, again, maybe it's like, what's the silver lining for this
okay,
policy?
Okay, but where, like, how much, like, every day, do we need to stand up to Ottawa every single day? Like, I think that we should be picking our strategic moments where it makes sense.
Pounding us down every single day.
No, like that's just ridiculous to me. The more time that you spend grandstanding, making a point to people that you are the best place to stand up to Ottawa, and no one is doubting that about Danielle Smith at this point, the less time you are spending on actual programs for people that make a difference in their lives. And yes, I think there has been a lot of frustration with Ottawa in Alberta for history. And I think that it has been up to premiers to stand up and make sure that Alberta is heard and Alberta has its place and Alberta is recognized. But you have to do that in tandem with other things. And like I said, Danielle Smith has made it her entire personality. And one, I think people just get tired of hearing it. They're like, we get it. Like, you stand up to Ottawa, we got it. They want to see results. They want to see what it means in their lives. And I don't know what Danielle Smith does if the federal government changes. Like, if this is her entire personality, what comes if Pierre Poilievre is prime minister?
And I've actually thought about that because Pierre Poilievre has also been very passionate about talking about housing. And so I think the difference is the tone that maybe is missed by this government is like, we want a seat at the table. We want to be a part of those discussions. Like, I mean, you have the government announcing this month a bunch of investments or in and in their budget of investments into housing, right? So it's like, well, why are we both contributing to the same thing, or why can't we work collaboratively? So how it's done versus what it's trying to achieve, I'm sure we could talk about all day. I think the difference, though, and where I'm going to come critical of Rachel Notley is like, you guys had a really tough economic situation when you guys were in government, yet you still had to give equalization payments to other jurisdictions that were doing better than you at the time.
So I'm totally not doing equalization as a
But you guys, you were in a shitty situation where the federal government didn't support you. So it's like, okay, but like, I am reassured that
the federal government, there's ways to get things from the federal government that don't include, like,
You're going to mention your little pipeline where government went from private corp, bailed it out. You know, I'm happy with the outcome, but it's not traditional. That's a an anomaly.
No, but like, when Daniel Smith stands up and says, Justin Trudeau needs to stay out of my business, he needs to stay out of my backyard, he needs to go do his job so I can do mine, and then says, why won't the federal government sit down and collaborate with us? Like, I think we all know why. And Rachel Notley took a much different approach in where she sat down, she brought facts to the table, she was the grown-up in the room, and she made the case that the pipeline, although Eastern Canada wasn't necessarily on board with it, that the pipeline was in Canada's interest and pushed the federal government to buy it. And I know you can say, like, we've heard about the pipeline, but that is monumental.
NDP government
pushed a Liberal federal government to purchase a pipeline to Tidewater.
But I would also say that one of the reasons why the UCP was so successful in 2019 is because we said we were going to stand up to Ottawa. And I think when it was horrible economic times, I would criticize the PCs for maybe not pushing as hard on Ottawa around 2008. Like, when you have really tough economic times, we still as Alberta pay out of pocket. That's why a fair deal panel came to be, and they're looking at ways of getting our fair deal in Confederation. So I do think that one of the misses from this, or why I think Rachel Notley didn't want to talk about it, is because she didn't have a good record on standing up for Alberta. Danielle Smith is owning that space, and I think you, what I'm hearing from you is she's doing it too much. I do have concerns again. Like, I don't think this is a knock this out of the park. This is your re-election ballot box question in any way, shape, or form. And you might be pissing off people as much as you're making people happy, because this almost seems like it was half-baked, because the regulation answers, the thresholds, all of that wasn't explained or rolled out with the legislation. So I'm not sitting here defending the government, saying they knocked this sucker out of the park.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to explain the intent of it. And again, I don't think Rachel did the best job of being opposition leader when she was defending it.
I think there are moments for sure when provincial leaders have to stand up and say, what's best for the country is not always what's best for Alberta. What's best for Ontario is not always what's best for Alberta. And anytime you have that sort of hero dynamic, I think Albertans celebrate it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of a 4-year term, you have to have more to show in terms of your success than we stood up to Ottawa every day. Like, what do you have to show for it? How are Albertans better off after 4 years because you stood up to Ottawa? And I think that will be, I mean, Danielle Smith's still early in her mandate, but that will be her challenge. Yes, she held press conferences every day. Yes, she got great headlines, but did it make my life better as an Albertan? And that will be her challenge in the next election.
And I don't disagree. That's why I said, like, is it because there's enough time to have that, the proof in the pudding of what you're doing? Or is it just like, cross your fingers that Pierre Poilievre is there and he wants to actually be a partner? I think that, again, this continues to be a win because we've seen it with, you know, a lump sum of funds to support doctors. You know, there was, and we don't get envelope funding, which is traditionally how federalism works. It's like, we're giving you X amount of money. You are the best decision makers for how to use those funds. And we're not seeing that with Justin Trudeau. So I do think that this period of time is very unique too. Like, I mean, Justin, the prime minister, is at an all-time low of you know, he's disliked. He's been asked it and doesn't seem to answer that question. But like, why are you so disliked? But it's also that they are doing things that are clearly combative with, you know, the way federalism works and things like that, that I can understand. But you're right. I will give you credit that, like, the fine line for me is like, okay, when do we start producing results as opposed to screaming and shouting. And I would say that I think that really hurt Premier Kenny on trying to move the needle and having proof. And we'll see if this pans out for the government.
Yeah. Let's switch gears a little bit because I feel like we could back and forth over the Ottawa-Alberta.
This could be a four-hour podcast every week.
Switch gears a little bit because there has the government of Alberta, the UCP, has made another recent announcement that there has been, you know, some controversy around or some, you know, mixed opinions on, saying that it would create two new health organizations. Mm-hmm. These are intended to support mental health and addiction. This is in response to or the second step in Daniel Smith's complete reorganization of Alberta Health Services. And we'll hear from Danielle Smith when she spoke at the Strong and Free conference about those two organizations.
And just last week, we announced the creation of two organizations, Recovery Alberta, which will be a new provincial health agency hived off from Alberta Health Services, dedicated to delivering mental health and addiction support, and the Canadian Centre of Recovery Excellence, which will inform best practices and evaluate programs in the field. Now, I want to compare that to what we're seeing with the NDP, because the worst case example of it is what you're seeing all down the West Coast, and the heart of it is policies that started focused exclusively on harm reduction about 20 years ago. But look at what has happened. Harm reduction became decriminalization, which became legalization.
Okay, so they're creating they're creating a crown corp, Cheryl. That's what like the NDP people love.
Yay!
So how can you not be wanting more government oversight and more involvement through crown corps?
Maybe I know some of the thinking around Recovery Alberta, which is, for anyone who can't get it from the name, addictions and mental health supports focused very specifically on recovery and not on harm reduction. I know some of this stems from some pretty deeply held beliefs and some lived experiences of those who are high up in the UCP government. Do you want to just start by shedding a little bit of light on that?
The government has been very clear, and I'll say in conversations with the premier herself, this is something she's so passionate about. Like, it makes its way, whether I think it's a good idea or not, into speeches across the province, political events, things like that. Like, she is so passionate about seeking recovery, shifting away. You saw in the election the introduction of like compassionate care, which would allow individuals beyond what we currently have, which is professionals, to recommend or mandate that people go to go into recovery that includes family members under the campaign promise. So expanding that scope, I would say. I was critical during the campaign. I went to the press conference and I kind of had to eat my words because of the stories that the stakeholders shared about how it changed their lives. The government has come from both expertise. This actually goes back to Premier Kenney, who was also very passionate about addressing the opioid crisis, and that it's not just, you know, a certain population. It was a universal thing that was starting to impact our communities, and as well as individuals that both work in the Premier's office and the minister himself and his staff that are very passionate about like the addictions recovery side of things. Now, I will preface that, like, I feel like today it's like I can bring light given my personal experience and just understanding the government, what they're trying to do. My biggest criticism is, like, where does mental health fit into this?
Mm-hmm.
And that that actually does bother me. So does that mean that this recovery center, and I think that the one criticism I have of this government is, like, it's very addiction focused, and I understand mm-hmm. why, but at the same time, like, what if, you know, I was depressed several years ago? Does that mean I'm in recovery now? Or what about people dealing with postpartum or schizophrenia or bipolar syndrome, or, you know, they're dealing with ADHD? Like, are you in recovery because you're like, I think it actually mm-hmm. changes the stigma for general mental health. And I think that they're not the same. Mental health and addictions is not the same. And I think that the introduction of this, entity and like CORE, which is also the Canadian Centre of Recovery Excellence Act, like, the government should actually be pretty clear that this is about making helping
and very
addicts
specific.
Yeah,
well, and I mean, it's specific in that sense, but it's specific, like, my question is, and I take nothing away from all of those lived experiences. I think it's really important that those who are looking for recovery, that the province is there to support them. And that piece of it, I applaud the government. Like, it's great if we have more supports. It's great if we have more opportunities and beds for people. But why do we have such a specific focus on one model? Mm-hmm. I think, like, I know they had experts speak at their conference talking about recovery, talking about helping mm-hmm. people get their lives back on track. But I think if you talk to almost any frontline worker, they will say that the best way to save lives is by doing everything we possibly can. And that's not a focus specifically on recovery. That's a focus on harm reduction mixed with the recovery model, to do everything, to use all the tools we possibly have to save the most number of lives on any given day.
Yeah. And I think, like, I'm gonna comment on that and where I think the government is trying to take it, and then the Erica Bruni's opinion. I think that they're trying to address that. There is a huge increase. Especially in more of the urban or rural centers, you see it on the streets, you see it in your downtown. Like, there's been an impact beyond just those individuals dealing with addiction. So I think it does become about safety, and the government is trying to find that balance, but also be the thought leader. And I think where a lot of this is coming back to is being that, research institute, providing guidance and I guess examples, or taking people's stories and journeys and looking and mapping that out, so that we can try and, like you said, reduce harm to as many people possible.
Okay, but can we just talk about CORE for a second? Because it sounds good on paper, like the Center of mm-hmm. Recovery Excellence. Let's take a look at best practices and evidence and take all the best information before we make our decisions. But an oversight body that makes recommendations to the government and offers insight on how the government is performing, that reports directly to the minister, doesn't mm-hmm. really seem to have the independence necessary to offer, like, thoughtful analysis yeah. on this. Like, usually if you have an independent expert, they report to the assembly, or they report, they are truly independent. Mm-hmm. But to say your grants are administered by the minister's office, your probably press releases are seen by the minister's office first, your board and your staff are all appointed by the minister. Like, this seems to me like more like a PR agency to sell what the government is doing rather than academically inform the government's work.
So I think that the theme for me today is, like, the government's walking a thin line. And what I mean is, both of these topics, like, there's an opportunity to make this really awesome and accelerate, but there's also an opportunity to add bureaucracy, add politicizing the situation, all of those things. So I'm trying to be optimistic in, like, okay, so they're laying this out. Like you said, it sounds really good. There's opportunity to do independent research. But again,
independent.
Like, yeah, for the listeners, she did quotations. I think that my biggest challenge, and, like, I'll tell you, my hardest day of media when you and I would go head to head, for me personally, was talking about compassionate care. Just because.
Mine too.
And then talking about that was really difficult going up. I think that, like, my personal belief is, like, that's nanny dating. That's telling people what to do. And I get, though, that there's some people that can't help themselves or that need that push. I think of, like, and this is a really weird example, but, like, that show Intervention, where the family would come and do the intervention. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's in the States, so it's obviously very different rules, than they have more authority over forcing people into treatment centers. But to me, I'm just like, that infringes personally on my freedom or freedom of choice. And so I really struggled with it. And again, like, we were pundits at that time. We spoke our key messages. I don't believe one size fits all with government, or sorry, with addictions recovery. And so for me, it's a really fine line of how they're going to roll this out. If they can use this for good, I think it's going to be so powerful. But if it becomes politicized, I think that's what my biggest concern is.
Well, and when
why
you
was it
see
hard
Daniel
for you?
Smith, I think it's a tough topic. Like, we're not, like, it's easy to say we're talking about which policy best suits ideology, or how, you know, I think at the time we were talking about, like, we're going to either force people into recovery or we're going to hand out drugs like candy.
Yeah. It was,
and,
like, we, like, throw
those
you
are the,
safe injection.
That's,
like, you
the
guys
heat
love safe
of the talking points.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're
yeah.
actually talking about real people's lives. Mm-hmm. And it's just easy to get lost in what your own party stands for and try to deeply defend it.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about, like, my own personal view is we should just be doing everything we possibly can, like, whether it fits in our ideology or not, whether, you know, let's take pieces from all the models, let's take pieces from all jurisdictions, and let's throw it all at it, because nothing is working completely. Like, we still have the last month was the highest drug deaths in Alberta. Nothing is working. So let's do it all.
Yeah, and we're getting people in recovery because we have facilities and beds now, but it's obviously not fixing the problem. So actually I have a question. Like, I agree we should do what's required. I come at it, I think, where we say we're very similar, but besides our values and beliefs, like, what does that mean to you? And maybe expand, if you want, to the NDP about, like, what does doing everything you can actually look like? Because I think my view of it's very different.
Well, when I say do everything you can, I think, so Danielle Smith stood on that stage at the Strong and Free conference and said, we're going to commit to the recovery model. We're going to get people's lives back on track. We're going to make sure that they have the supports that they need to get off drugs. We're not going to do what the NDP is doing in BC, which is hand out drugs and decriminalize them and have drugs everywhere. And I don't think that that's the question in front of us. I don't think that's the alternative in front of us. I think that we have an opportunity to say there are people who could greatly benefit from having more recovery spaces and having the supports that they need to get into recovery. There's also lots of benefits to the harm reduction model if we implement it in a way that keeps our communities safe. And in the case of British Columbia, which is super extreme, our hospitals safe. But why would we, because of one bad example, say we're going to rule out this entire model and it doesn't have a place here? Yeah. I think that is just that's an ideological approach to me.
And I don't know if my approach is, again, this is my personal opinion. It's nowhere in key messages, I can guarantee you that. But like, I look at it and it's like, okay, what is the problem we're trying to solve? And for me, it's actually like the public safety and like the crime that we see on the streets and people like...
Isn't the problem we're trying to solve people are dying?
Well, yes, also that, but if people are dying, okay, so fair. But I'm looking at it from like, I am an Albertan, and yes, I'm empathetic to those people, but is giving them more drugs, and where I fundamentally disagree is like, is giving them more drugs, keeping them alive and saving them, and then what's the byproduct of that? And so maybe I'm looking at a secondary, but like the thing that keeps me up at night about this is also like the safety of others. If you're not capable because you can't, your addiction is out of hand, where you're unsafe to community, and this might be a contentious thing that I'm about to say, and I feel like that preamble just like elevated it, and I would in all media training tell someone not to say it like that, but that like I think the thing is that why it's such a top of mind topic is, yes, we all are compassionate about individuals, but even bigger, we can't use downtown. We can't take kids to certain places. We're seeing like needles at playgrounds and people like crime going up. So I think one of the reasons why people are so engaged is, yes, on the heartstrings of things, but also on the fact that it's impacting their life and making them unsafe. So I actually, like, and I've said this before, I think that this government should be tougher on crime. I think there's a balance of empathy and also cleaning up our streets, putting more police officers in the downtown, great, but like, where are you taking these people? Because if you're just relocating them, that's not solving a problem. I do think that personally, if you're breaking the law, whether you're an addict or not, that, you know, if someone I know is doing cocaine and they get caught doing it on the street, that they should go to jail. So if you're a danger to society, to you and others, why wouldn't you, and you're breaking the law and hurting others, which is also breaking the law, why you wouldn't go to jail or recovery? Like, why are we letting people be on the streets, or why are we saying, and that's where like fundamentally I don't understand why the NDP is like, yeah, just let them go do the drugs at a safe place. That's great. That makes them safe so that they don't die. Cool. Like, I'm not even going to go down that route, but like, why are we then making it okay for them to break the law also?
And I can completely agree that the implications of some harm reduction strategies are really detrimental to communities. And I think some communities have figured that out the hard way. It's absolutely a balance. I think harm reduction plays a really important role in addictions programming. But it has to be done in cooperation with communities, and it has to be done where it doesn't have impacts on businesses, and it doesn't have impacts where people feel like their families are unsafe. And unfortunately, we've had to figure that out as we go, because like the deaths aren't stopping. So governments are trying what they can. And in some places it hasn't worked. Lethbridge is a great example. Safe consumption site downtown was really, really detrimental to businesses mm-hmm. because of the location, not because safe consumption in itself is detrimental.
Yeah. And again, though, it's like where those locations are, we've talked about Rachel Notley not wanting one in her backyard, right? Like it's yeah. easy to say, hard to do. But like, I guess my question is like, why is the NDP then so critical of the government trying to get addicts off the street? And I'm way less like empathetic than the government wanting them.
Is the NDP critical of this bill?
And maybe fair. Maybe explain what you think.
It's like hyper focused. Yeah, because the bill is hyper focused.
But they've also you guys shit on during the election. The either compassionate care or, you know, you were like, people should be able to choose. And it's like, but is really like letting them shoot up 5 times and getting naloxone and having police support those people where there's someone breaking in somewhere else. Like, again, you talk about balance. I totally agree. I think the challenge is that no one in society knows what that balance looks like. Really yeah. hard because it's so subjective. And so I don't see, like, my criticism of the NDP is they're so adverse to anything that comes out by the UCP that it's like, it doesn't matter if it's a good frickin' idea. They're just gonna shit on it.
But it's not a good idea. Like in this case, it's a piece of a good idea. But standing up and saying we are never going to consider harm reduction strategies, that's not a good idea. So why build an entire Crown Corporation dedicated to one piece that you haven't even done the research on yet that rules out an entire other piece purely so you can say we won't be like those NDP and BC? I think that's the bad idea. And granted, BC is a terrible example. The timing on it was perfect for Danielle Smith to be able to point to and say, we won't be a province that does that. But there is something in the middle where we can save more lives, where people can get recovery when they're ready to recover, where we can keep them alive while they're still struggling. And I just don't think this hits the mark.
And fair. Like, I mean, I don't know if a new organization is going to hit the mark. I think that the thing for me is also to point out to our listeners, Strong and Free is traditionally quite a conservative room. So, I mean, the audience she is speaking to when she's pointing to the NDP is like the alternative, not a general government news conference yeah. where I don't think she would use that same language. So, I mean, it is audience segmentation in her defense. But, you know, I do think it's, again, it's walking a tight line. This is, remember last session when I was like, when is this government going to do the contentious things that are like difficult? Because that's what you typically do in your first year of a mandate. Well, I guess my question has been answered through this legislative session. It was like snore bore before. And now we've got stuff, lots of stuff to talk about as this legislative session continues. But I want to get your thoughts on this NDP leadership.
Yes, before we wrap up, the NDP leadership now, only a couple of days left to sell memberships, only a couple days left to raise the next $20,000 payment. So let's talk. Erica, I know you always have hot takes on position that the candidates are in. Can't wait to hear them.
Okay, well, mine's more like, because I'm such an NDP insider now that I'm like, all I keep hearing from, well, NDP circles and then one degree of separation of like, you know, our co-colleagues and lots of people talking from the Nenshi campaign, whether it's out of turn or intentional or strategic or what, keep being like, oh, we've doubled the membership in the NDP. This is a coronation. Like that's language I'm hearing coming out of the NDP world. And like that doesn't sit well with me as someone that just like loves the process. I mean, I nerd out on this like leadership policy stuff, but like, is that true? Like they say, you know, what I'm hearing from that world is like Racky, you know, Racky was the first to go. We're going to see more in this next tranche. Everyone's getting between Nenshi. There's inside talks. Like, what does that say for the party? And like, are you hearing, or are they just sending me on a wild goose chase?
Well, I think they're like Nenshi has certainly started a lot of conversations since he joined the race, and
so
he came
lying.
In with a ton of momentum.
Yeah,
like you'll remember when Racky dropped out, she said that Nenshi has doubled the membership, and I can't keep up.
Yeah,
I think truthfully, like the membership has been doubled or more. We'll see the numbers next month. But when candidates get those updates, they don't know who sells each membership, so. Over the course, like I know campaigns have been posting, like more than the Nenshi campaign is selling thousands of memberships. So it's sort of hard to tell who, like, if the membership is doubled, who those votes belong to, or like, who sold them.
Are there inside deals happening? Like, I keep hearing that. I hear like liberal alignment. Like, all I keep hearing is it's done. It's a coronation for Nenshi, and this is going to be the new Alberta party. Because you've said this, they have got a taste of victory. And so it's now a party that wants to win. And I could argue that that happened. There was a lot of conversations when I was with the Wild Rose about like, okay, where, like, you know, we can win it, not just like stand on our soapbox and scream what we value. So I don't know. What does this mean for the NDP?
Okay. So like, I think part of me is thinking about the debates because I think a lot of people like the idea of Nahed Nenshi and believe that he can compete with Daniel Smith in the next election. But in terms of policy, like, truly, he hasn't said a lot.
He hasn't said anything.
and he hasn't said anything.
Yeah.
So it will be really hard to go through three official debates and say nothing. But I think this will be where members can actually look at him and say, what direction is he taking the NDP in? And does he want to create, like, a liberal dressed as an NDP, or the Alberta party in the shell of the NDP? And his positions on, you know, some of the key issues that New Democrats care about will either turn people away or convince them that their vote should stay with him. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't offered any of that yet. So I think that is a decider for a lot of people in the party.
So I got to come back to this, because like, how then does Racky be like, he's the choice for our party, or people do it? It's like, he said nothing. Like, he hasn't done anything besides be like, I'm Nahed Nenshi. Like,
I don't know why she dropped. Like, I think she should have stayed.
I think this is like the miss of this leadership. I'm like, you know, you and I both run. If we were running a race, and I've DNF'd a few times, so did not finish. But I mean, like, if I'm in a leadership race or I'm running, it's like, it's clear. Like, I'm literally hurt to the point. She was not a hurter. Like, she just decided to just, like, all of a sudden be like, nah, I don't want to run today. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, I can't get over it.
I think she was saying, like, she ran to sort of, like, expand the party, and she could see someone else sort of doing that more efficiently than she was, and she saw that in Nahed Nenshi. I don't think when she said that she was talking at all about policy. I don't know how she could be, because he hasn't really, as you said, offered anything on policy so far. But I do think that, like I've said this before, I don't think New Democrats, at least the New Democrats we've seen over the last decade, are a win at all costs party. Like, I don't think it's a party that's willing to say, we give up all that we are, we give up the fundamental things we believe in, we give up the way that we have, you know, approached politics forever, just because we have a really star candidate. And some of that will come out. Like, it depends where he sits in the campaign, and it depends what kind of policies he rolls out, and people will really make up their minds there.
Yeah, it's just interesting because, like, I remember, like, some of the argument with Danielle Smith when she was running in leadership was, again, like, how she's going to change the membership, a different group, what she believes in and runs on. And it is actually, to some degree, true. I think there was a lot of fear within our own party of what that looked like. And so, I mean, watching this, I'm like, oh, this is what it looks like from the outside of seeing someone that, like, honestly, I think he would transform. And good or bad, that's not my decision. I'm not buying a membership. But like, the party in a, again, like, all I'm hearing is like, oh, it's just the Alberta Party 2.0. And so, again, like you said, I don't know how that's going to play out. Is it disappointing for the NDP, who have very, you know, not gone through this process, that they're like, we're in it to win it and we'll sacrifice our values? Is that what you get with Nahed Nenshi or someone else? Or, you know, do you lean the other way and lean hard into who the NDP traditionally has been? And I mean, I think that's like, what it's going to come down to.
The membership is boisterous, right? Like, if there's a leader who really wants to take the party in a different direction, there is at least a big chunk of the membership that's going to push back on it. So it will be hard for someone to come in and say, I'm going to take this party in a completely new direction. Now, that being said, like, this is a new era. No matter what, this is not Rachel Notley's NDP anymore. So I do think the party looks different no matter who the next leader is. But I don't, like, I think the membership will push back if there's someone who's really looking to turn the party into something that it hasn't been historically.
So you guys might have less than a decade between your leaderships. Like, welcome to my club. But do you think anyone else drops out? Before we wrap, I want to know, do you think, like, in this next cutoff, like, we're going to see Gill, who was shockingly endorsed by his own union he works with, or is everyone going to make it?
You know, I don't know. I really, really hope that everyone makes it. I think for a couple of people, that next $20,000 mark might be tough. Like $20,000, like these campaigns are expensive. And to have to pay another $20,000 to continue might be a barrier for a couple of campaigns. But truthfully, even the candidates that seem like a bit of a longer shot to win, I really think bring something really important to the conversation around who the NDP is, and certainly would love to see them and their priority issues in the debate. So I'm really hoping that everyone sticks it out to the end. Also would make a much better party on the results night.
Yeah, that's, I mean, we'll I guess we'll see in the coming days on where the membership really sits. You know, I subscribe to all their emails, so I know their strategies and things like that. They keep being like, you're not on our membership list. And I'm like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. Anyways, well, over to you to close us out.
Okay, that's our show for today. Remember, new episodes drop almost every Thursday. We had a little time off last week, but every Thursday morning, first thing.
And don't forget to like and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Discourse is hosted by Cheryl Oates and Erica Baroudis. Follow on Instagram at The Discourse Pod. Subscribe to The Discourse on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.